Hello and welcome. My name's Nicole and I'm the moderator for tonight's program. Thank you so much for joining this live virtual community meeting for a construction update from Energy Transfer on the Mariner East Pipeline and for a chance to ask questions to Joe McGinn, who is the Vice President of Public Affairs for Energy Transfer, Nick Bryan, who's our Senior Director of Engineering and Engineering and Construction Environmental Compliance, and Matt Gordon, our Senior Director of Pipeline Operations. Now, at any time during the call, if you've got a question, press star 3 to let us know. Press star 3 if at any point during this community meeting you have a question, and you'll be directed to a live screener who will take your question. Again, that's star 3 if you'd like to be connected to an operator. And if you'd like more information after this call is over, you can visit our website, which is MarinerPipelineFacts.com/Marsh Creek, or you can always dial our hotline at 855-430-4491. And with that, it's my pleasure to introduce you to Joe McGinn, Vice President of Public Affairs for Energy Transfer.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining the call tonight for a Chester County Teletown Hall hosted by Energy Transfer. We understand that a lot of people have questions and concerns about recent construction activity in Chester County, and we'd like to address those tonight. We also understand that not everyone who is interested in this topic is able to join this call. So we'll be posting an audio recording on our new informational landing page, which you will hear about throughout tonight, www.marinerpipelinefacts.com/Marsh Creek. We'd also like to address some of the misinformation that is being shared across social media and even in some traditional news, unfortunately stemming from a handful of folks who don't have all the facts. We'd like to share the accurate information with you tonight, coming straight from the experts handling this work day in and day out. And finally, I wanted to share some updates on the entire Mariner East project, and specifically what work remains to be done in Chester County and Southeast PA. As a reminder, please press star 3 for any questions you have during this call to be connected to an operator. Turning to Mariner East, the initial phase of the Mariner East system came online in December of 2014, moving propane across Pennsylvania. This initial phase added new and existing pipelines to the system, and Mariner East 2 initially started up in 2018. Most recently, we added a 13-mile segment of newly completed pipeline in eastern Chester and western Delaware counties earlier this year. So, what's left to build? We've made significant progress, and the last 12 months have been the busiest from a construction standpoint that we have had in Chester County. Many areas are fully complete in the county, and if we're able to continue construction at our remaining sites, we'll be completely done in Chester County in a few months. Now, back to the key issue at hand. As you're likely aware, on August 10th, an inadvertent return, or an IR, which you'll hear us say on the call, of water and bentonite clay occurred near a Mariner East drill site in Upper Euclid Township, leading into Marsh Creek Lake. Our crews immediately enacted their HDD response plan, filed with the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, to contain, remove, and recycle the bentonite clay and water mix, sometimes referred to as drilling mud. As noted in our IR report filed with the DEP, a total of 7,712 gallons was the maximum amount of drilling mud that could have been released. Of that 7,700 gallons, only a small amount is bentonite, with approximately 85 to 95% of it, of that drilling mud being water. At this point, the entire stream and area leading to Marsh Creek Lake is cleaned up. We're working with a third-party expert for a plan to recover the mud that made it to the lake. There are a few points we want to explain or clarify as they relate to this IR tonight. First, what is an inadvertent return or an IR? An inadvertent return is an event that can occur during a horizontal directional drill, which you'll hear is referred to as an HDD, when drilling mud can rise through pre-existing cracks in the rock and soil that naturally occur throughout the ground here across Pennsylvania and the U.S. And reach the surface. An IR is a potential occurrence in the course of HDD activity, which is why our DEP permits include plans to address them, and they do not typically result in long-term impacts to the environment. Second, What is the drilling mud made of, and is it harmful? The drilling mud released during an IR is made up of mostly water and a naturally occurring non-toxic clay called bentonite. Bentonite is an important part of the HDD drilling process. It's used to keep drilling tools cool, to remove drilled material, to support the drilling hole, and to lubricate the drill bit and the pipe during the final stages of pulling the pipe. Drilling mud typically ranges from 2 to 15% bentonite clay and between 85 to about 95% water. You may also be aware that the same bentonite used in the HDD process can be found in many everyday household products, like hand soaps and lotions, as well as during the wine and beer making process. It's also sometimes used for medicinal purposes. And it's recognized by the FDA as a quote-unquote generally recognized safe food substance. Additionally, often during open excavation of certain wetlands, bentonite clay is added above the pipeline trench to provide a confining layer for water within the wetland. This is approved by state and federal agencies as a way to protect the wetland hydrology. And lastly, before I introduce you to my colleagues and take questions, I want to clarify and emphasize that the IR at Marsh Creek Lake did not impact public drinking water. This was confirmed both by the DEP as well as a local public water company, Aqua PA. Now I'd like to introduce a few folks who have been integral to the Mariner East Pipeline Project from operations and environmental engineering. But before I do, I want to thank everyone for joining this live teletown hall with Energy Transfer. I'm Joe McGinn, the Vice President of Public Affairs here in southeastern Pennsylvania. And again, if you have any questions during the call, please press star 3 to speak with an operator. And to learn more about the project, please visit our website, www.marinerpipelinefacts.com. Now, let me introduce you to my colleague, Nick Bryan. Nick's our Senior Director of Environmental Engineering and Compliance. He's based in our Williamsport office in Lycoming County. Nick, over to you to share some background on your work.
Good evening. Thank you, Joe. As Joe said, my name is Nick Bryan. I'm the Senior Director with Energy Transfer, supporting engineering and construction projects related to environmental compliance in the region. I'm a Pennsylvania native and have lived and worked in Pennsylvania my entire career. I look forward to taking your questions this evening.
Thanks, Nick. Next, let me introduce you to Matt Gordon. Matt's our Senior Director of Operations in the Eastern United States. He's based in Berks County at our Montello Terminal. Matt, I'll turn it over to you to share some more background on what you do on a daily basis.
Thanks, Joe. As you said, my name is Matthew Gordon. I am the Senior Director of Liquid Pipeline Operations. So my team operates all the pipelines and the storage tanks in the eastern area, which includes Pennsylvania, of which I was born and raised in Berks County, Pennsylvania, so I know the area quite well. We are responsible, again, for operating the pipelines, ensuring safe, compliant operation with all government regulations, and also protecting the pipelines, both with cathodic protection, and we're part of the PA1 call system. So my folks are the ones you see out there driving in their pickup trucks, marking out lines when you place a one call. And if you ever drive by one of our facilities, you see them working behind the fence line. Thanks for that, Joe. And remember, everybody, if you have a question, please be sure to hit star 3.
Thanks, Matt. Now we'd like to open this up for questions. Before I hand it back to Nicole for our first question, I want to plug a new landing page chock full of information and resources related to inadvertent returns, the HDD drilling process, bentonite clay, and more. Again, please visit www.marinerpipelinefacts.com/Marsh Creek for more information and to sign up for project email updates. Nicole, back to you.
Great. Thank you so much, Joe. Friends, we are here to take questions tonight and to give you an update on Energy Transfer and some updates on the Mariner East Pipeline. We've got quite a few questions to answer tonight, and if you've got a question, you can press star 3. Joe and team, the first question we have is from Mary in Phoenixville. Why does Energy Transfer keep having inadvertent returns, and what are you going to do to keep them from happening again?
Yeah, thanks, Mary, for the question. We do everything we can to prevent IRs. They're known to be, they're known to happen, and they can occur during the HDD process, as I talked about in the intro. That's why there's a process and plan for it. Every operator like us that or our contractors that use HDD during construction must have an approved response plan as part of their environmental permit, and that's before construction can begin. So, you know, with IRs, we do work closely with the DEP to adhere to our plan, and we've taken a number of steps to reduce the potential for any IRs, and that significantly reduced the number of IRs on this project. One of the things we do is we use, when we're doing these HDDs, we use two drills, so one on each side, and that helps keep the annular pressure down. So in that significantly reduces the chance of an IR happening during that initial drill and that what we call piloting. So after that, you know, we also install casing at both ends of the drill. So what that is, and for folks that live near pipeline construction, I know, you know, it can be loud. But it's one of the things that do really help in terms of minimizing and mitigating any IRs. But that casing is drilled all the way down to bedrock. So that drill will go through the casing until we reach bedrock. So that gets set in, and that greatly reduces the chance of those IRs and what was called, if you hear DEP or pay attention closely to this, a punch out when the drill is about to exit or enter any hole. And then if you kind of take a step back and you look at the big picture, our success rate on the project, you know, has been pretty good. We've had 20 drill rigs running for 6 days a week. So if you look at 2020 this year so far, we've installed over 14,000 feet. So that's, you know, over 2.5 miles of pipeline using HDD across 6 drills. We had an IR on Marsh Creek that we're talking about. Other than that, we had one IR that was about 2 gallons in an upland area, which means you know, in a grassy or an area that's in our construction area. So in 2019, we installed 62,000 feet of pipeline by HDD. That's about 12 miles across 19 drills. Again, doing that very safely and minimizing any issues. So again, to reiterate, IRs are predominantly water, as we talked about, and non-toxic bentonite clay. There's multiple steps we take, and if you take a step back and identify, and what we do to identify if there is a potential IR, so here's what we do. If this isn't if it happens, but this is if there's any concern that it could happen. So we shut down our activity. We have environmental inspectors on site that are there to look at that, question that, and ask our folks to shut down if they have a concern. We notify the appropriate agencies and landowners. Next, if there is an issue, we contain and clean up the drilling mud. And then finally, we have a process for a reevaluation of the HDD, and that's something that the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, as well as, you know, we're talking here in Chester County, the Chester County Conservation District, are involved in and handle inspections. And again, on all of this information, as I talked about earlier, and if you want to learn more about HDDs and IR mitigation measures, you can take a look at our website, www.marinerpipelinefacts.com/Marsh Creek.
Great. Thanks so much for answering that question. If you want to ask your question, press *3 to let us know that. The next question we've got comes from Sam in Avondale, and what he asks is, the news reports call this a hazardous spill, and you're telling me it's nothing but clay and water. What should I believe?
Yeah, thanks, Sam. I'm going to turn it over to Nick Bryan, our Senior Director of Environmental, to answer that one.
Thanks, Joe. It's always important to trust the experts and to fact check anything that you're hearing publicly. And we're not saying to just listen to us. The PADEP has abundance of information on their website, including fact sheets about HDD practices and bentonite clay, as well as other drilling fluid additives that are approved for use by the department. Any drilling additive which includes bentonite must adhere to standards for safe drinking water. And as DEP states, it may not be used in a manner that causes pollution or a threat of pollution to waters of the Commonwealth.
Great. Thanks so much for answering that one. If you've got a question, again, press *3. This is a virtual community meeting with Energy Transfer. We're talking about updates on the Mariner East Pipeline if you just joined us. The next question we've got is from Amber in Coatesville. She says, your initial report said only 1,000 gallons of drilling mud was spilled. The news reported 10,000, and now I'm hearing around 8,000. What's the right amount, and how do you know that for sure?
Yeah, thanks. So there was an early unofficial report, and we're required to do that, and the early estimate was about 1,000 gallons. And that's based on visual field observations, what people are seeing that are working out there. However, we do have to submit an official IR report, so that gets filed with the DEP. And our contractors in that noted a maximum total of just over 8,000 gallons that could have been released. So since then, you know, we've had we made a significant amount of progress in cleanup efforts. So in doing that, that helps you get a better idea of what the volume is and what any amount has been there. So with our crews and contractors that are out there and third parties, you know, they've confirmed an even lower maximum amount of that, what I shared earlier, that's 7,172 gallons. And again, that's the most that could have been released. So this was calculated using the location of the IR as well as elevation and other, you know, scientific parameters. So the 10,000 number being widely reported is just an overestimation, stemming from, you know, what some folks are sharing and putting on social media and other estimates.
Great. Thanks so much for that answer, Joe, and thanks, Amber, for that question. I know several folks had that same question tonight, so I'm glad we can answer it for everyone. To ask your question, again, it's *3, and you're on the line here with folks from Energy Transfer answering your questions. So the next question we've got comes from Brian and Elverson. I know Sunoco has several active pipelines in the area. How do the current construction activities impact the existing pipelines that are already in service?
Yeah, for that question, I'm going to turn it over to Matt Gordon, our Senior Director of Operations. Matt?
Thanks, Joe. That's a good question. So as I mentioned earlier when I introduced myself, we participate in the Pennsylvania One Call system. It's the law, whether you're a homeowner working in your backyard, or whether you're a major construction company, you're required to place a one call before you dig in the ground to make sure that you can't accidentally injure, undermine, or somehow impact a third-party utility, whether it's a pipeline, cable, water, sewer, so on and so forth. So the more complicated a project becomes, the higher the constraints are by the state law. In the case of pipeline construction, it's considered a complex project, and there's a whole separate set of rules that have to be followed before the project can even be shovel-ready for the ground. So the state requires that someone performing a complex project places a complex project design one call and submits their plans to all the different groups that it will cross while constructing its project. So it's not just our pipelines in the right-of-way. There's hundreds of other pipelines that are crossed as the project traverses the Commonwealth. And the person placing that design one call meets, and their engineer meets with each of those parties, determines the location of their utility, the depth of their utility, and what methods they need to both safely cross those utilities as well as support those utilities while they're traversing around, over, or underneath them. So it's engineered to make sure that there won't be impacts to those lines during construction. And there's various ways we can protect them. We'll sometimes build bridges over top of them. More often than not, we just make sure that we positively identify the location of those utilities, and they use a soft digging technique, which typically is a vacuum truck or sometimes a hydro vacuum truck that will jet water into the ground, obviously soft, form of excavation. And they will expose the top of the utility to positively confirm its location and depth. A surveyor will record the GPS location of that utility, and they will put a stake there indicating the location and the depth of the utility. The designers then can go back to the drawing board and make sure that their planned construction isn't going to interfere with the location of that utility. But it also leaves a visual mark and coordinates for the surveyors ahead of construction to mark out the locations of those utilities prior to the construction crews coming through and crossing them. And then there's already a discussion in place with that utility owner so that they know the project's coming and they can plan the resources to be out in the field with the contractors and make sure that they're working safely around those active utilities to keep them protected at all times. Thanks.
Thanks so much for answering that one, folks. You're on the line with Joe McGinn, Nick Bryan, and Matt Gordon. We're talking about Energy Transfer and updates on the Mariner East Pipeline. So we're answering your questions, and star 3 if you've got a question. It looks like our next question comes from Brian in East Ocean. He asks, Joe said that if everything goes as planned, it would be getting done in a couple months. Can you expand more on a couple of months, and how long will that be?
Yeah, sure. So I'd say in terms of what's left, a few months. So first, you know, where is construction done? So really the western half of construction in Chester County is all done, from kind of the Berks County border around Elverson all the way through just about the Marsh Creek area. And then as you look east, a good amount of construction is done, but we have certain sites, most of them are these HDDs or horizontal directional drills. In fact, we just actually pulled back the pipe in one area and completed the second and final installation in East Goshen on Boot Road, right where there's the Hershey Mill Village Square and the giant there on Boot. So we're continually wrapping up site by site. Most of these sites, you know, will wrap up here in the next couple of months, but there are some that could linger. And assuming we're allowed to continue construction, you know, we're close to wrapping things up really, you know, frankly, this winter. So that's kind of where things look right now. Certainly there's contingency to that, but that's kind of where things look and when we expect construction to wrap up at this point.
Great. Thank you so much for that. I know we've got a lot of questions in the queue, and we're going to take as many of them as we possibly can in the time we've got tonight with everyone on this community meeting. But we may not get to every question, so we're going to try to take the questions that we are seeing a lot of interest that many of you have. And then we also want to direct you to the landing page we've got, which is marinerpipelinefacts.com/Marsh Creek. So you can visit that as well. The next question we have is River from Oxford, which is, did your drilling permanently impact an aquifer at Schoen Road in West Whiteland Township?
Yeah, Nick, why don't you take that one?
Thanks, Joe. This is another issue that has certainly gotten a lot of attention lately, and there's a lot of information that has been construed in the news and social media. The key point is that our work has not impacted any drinking water, as confirmed by both DEP and AquaPA. With that said, breaching an aquifer just means that we've encountered groundwater, which is a temporary occurrence and is planned as part of the HDD process. As such, we have plans in place to address groundwater both in routine conditions and weather, as well as when we have a storm event such as the one we had a few weeks ago with Tropical Storm Isaias.
Great. Thanks so much for that, folks. We're going to get right to the next question so we can take as many of them as we can. Next one, we've got Gene from Malvern, and let me get that question up. Gene's question is, there are reports of oil release during this incident. Can you verify that that's false?
Yeah, I can confirm that's inaccurate. There was no oil released and no impact to the pipelines. As we've talked about and discussed, the Marsh Creek incident was drilling mud, and we've described that as bentonite clay and water.
Great. Thanks so much for that, folks. We still have time, and so if you do have a question, you can press star 3. And remember, you can always visit that website at marinerpipelinefacts.com/Marsh Creek after this call is over. It looks like next question we have is Madison in Chesterbrook, which her question tonight is, why are we realizing all the risks associated with this pipeline when all the gas is being sent to Europe to make plastics? What are the benefits to me and my family?
Yeah, so a couple of parts of that question. So I think the first part in understanding, and it's important to understand, is the operation side. So from a construction operation standpoint, what's done in terms of the prepare and build and maintain and operate a pipeline? So and frankly mitigate any risk that could come from it. So for that part, Matt, why don't you take that, and then I'll circle back to talk about, you know, the question about benefits and use.
Sure. Yeah, Joe, as I talked about earlier, a project of this size is years in the planning and permitting stages before it ever gets to shovel-ready construction phase. So a lot of engineering, a lot of professionals go out there and evaluate the project, the area it's at, and then it's reviewed by the government agencies to make sure it's an environmentally sensitive project and that the plan is sound before they even issue the permit. So from a risk standpoint, there's a lot of design on the front end, and then contingency plans are actually written into the permits to help protect the environment throughout construction. The pipelines itself, if you go to, we're regulated under the Pipeline Hazardous Material Safety Administration. So if you were to go to their website and look at refined products pipelines under 195 and HVL pipelines, you would see that the main two risks that they look at our pipelines are typically corrosion or third-party damage. Corrosion is just like it sounds like, rust. We're talking about brand new pipes here that have not rusted, but even for the lines that have been in the ground since the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, they've had cathodic protection in place since the 50s. And cathodic protection is a system that prevents corrosion and rapid corrosion growth on steel. We have technicians out there every day and since the 50s maintaining those systems. And the systems actually meet and in many cases exceed what the federal minimum requirements are. We send inline inspection tools through the pipelines that are a second verification that that system's working. They're both looking at the steel. The tools look at the thickness of the steel as they travel through the pipeline and make sure it doesn't see any changes in thickness that might indicate corrosion. But they're also looking for any potential dents in the pipe that could indicate third-party damage. So third-party damage most associated with the pipeline is when someone's out working and they haven't placed a one call and they accidentally strike the utility. So obviously we were part of the PA one call system to prevent that from ever happening. We have aerial patrols, so we have airplanes fly over top of the pipeline twice a week. They're looking for folks out there, and they have the ability to radio the ground and let us know if there's someone out there working so we can immediately get out there, stop them, and verify they're working safely. We also have our folks on the ground participating in the one-call system, marking out one-calls for folks that are out there doing their job and making sure that we stay on site and enforce all of our setbacks so that they're not excavating near the active pipelines and ensure that they're protected at all times. That's our number one job, is operating safely. And then as far as day-to-day operations of the pipeline, I want to make sure everyone understands. We have a state-of-the-art computer-controlled leak detection system. There are multiple computers that are reading all of the data across this pipeline. Picture, if you will, it's much like the turnpike. We have on-ramps and off-ramps where customers can put product into the pipeline and they can take it out at another location. At every location where the product goes in or out, there are meters that measure how much product's going in, as well as the temperature, the pressure, the specific gravity, and other engineering parameters. There is redundancy at every one of those sites. We have backup pieces of equipment for every piece of equipment that's out there, so that we always have two spares online ready to go in case one device were to fail or need some maintenance work on it. And the computers themselves have three forms of redundant communication back to our control center that's manned 24/7 by a live human being. Yes, the computers can shut the pipeline down safely. The computers can detect leaks. But we also have a human being live 24/7 working in shifts, overseeing the system. We don't just leave it to the computer itself. But the computer, again, does have that ability to shut the pipeline down without human intervention. Just because we don't want to necessarily rely on one system. It's all about redundancy of safety. Same thing for power. Most of these sites, I think recently we talked about Isaias when it came through. A lot of folks in Chester County lost power. Our sites did not, because we have our own uninterrupted power supplies on site. Those sites have their own backup system that will power them for days on end. And then to take matters further, if it was going to be an even longer outage, we can add spare generator capacity to keep those sites operating safely and to feed information back to the control center around the clock. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. And let me jump in and try to answer the other part of the question in terms of, you know, what the benefits are and you know, having pipelines and folks feeling in terms of running through their community. So, you know, the products that we're moving in the Marinery system are natural gas liquids, primarily ethane, propane, and butane. Most folks are familiar with propane, whether they use it to heat their home or if they have a, you know, a gas grill. Butane, you know, a little less so, you know, outside of a butane lighter, and ethane, probably more limited familiarity. But they're all products that we need and use in our daily lives. So, you know, one of the pieces I think is first and foremost is important is that ultimately we all benefit from infrastructure, whether it's pipelines like these, whether it's our roads, whether it's our rail system. The challenge is they have to be sited. And, you know, folks that have pipelines or other infrastructure near them, you know, there are impacts. If we have to do maintenance, you know, and it's near your yard or in your area, we have to construct near you. Same thing goes for PennDOT with a road or Conrail or anybody else with a rail line. So that comes with it. It doesn't diminish that we all benefit. It's just they have to be sited. When you look at, you know, the question in terms of plastics and benefits, the first thing is, you know, plastics are part of our everyday lives. From kayaks to Legos, you know, we use them recreationally. We use them for clothing. We talked about medicinal uses and other uses. You know, butane, what's interesting too is when you think of, you know, the Sunoco pipeline side of this in Sunoco, you know, a company that's operated in Pennsylvania since the turn of the 20th century, the 1900s. Those pipelines basically were built to move products that we use to fuel our homes, heating oil to jet fuel to gasoline to diesel fuel. So butane, most people don't realize this, is actually blended into the fuel, the gasoline we put in our gas tank. So that butane, rather than be processed or come from overseas or through refining, is actually, you know, manufactured after drilling, moved in our pipeline system, and then sent out to other refiners and blenders to blend it into gasoline that we fill up with at Wawa or Sunoco, BP, wherever. So that's a little bit in terms of use and what those needs are. So a couple things just before we take questions. You know, one correction, and I apologize for this in terms of, you know, misreading my notes, but to be specific, the amount of the inadvertent return at Marsh Creek Lake is 7,712 gallons. I mistakenly said 7,172 gallons, so I apologize for that. Just to repeat, the IR amount was 7,712 gallons. So again, my apologies for that error in looking at my notes. And lastly, just a reminder, if you have questions or you want to have them answered during the call, please press *3 to talk to an operator. And also behind it and beyond for more information, don't forget our website, www.marinerpipelinefacts.com/Marsh Creek. And we also have a hotline, which I haven't touched on this evening, but many, in fact, some folks on this call may be familiar with it or used it, but it's staffed 24/7 for calls, and that number is toll-free, 855-430-4491. Again, 855-430-4491. I'll turn it back to you, Nicole, for the next question.
Great. Thank you so much, Joe, and thanks to everyone who's been asking questions tonight. We really appreciate that. The next one we've got for you is from Heather in Westchester. She asks, you said there are no immediate impacts to the fish and wildlife. What about long-term impacts, and will anyone be looking at this situation again in a few weeks or a few months?
I'm going to turn that over to our Senior Director for Environmental, Nick Bryan. Nick, thanks.
Yeah, despite the non-toxic nature of the drilling mud, we're closely analyzing and verifying any potential impacts to any fish and wildlife as we complete our cleanup activities as a result of the IR. We've retained a third-party consultant to assess and sample the impact of the bentonite in the lake, and we're currently awaiting those results. And we are committed to environmental conservation and the long-term integrity of the environment and the remediation of this area.
Great. Thanks so much for that. We've got time for a few more questions, so we're going to go to the next one. We've got Susan in Exton. Her question is, what products exactly are going to flow through these pipes, and how do you know that there aren't leaks, and what happens if there's a problem?
Sure. I touched on that briefly in an earlier question, but why don't I let Matt take that one since he heads up our operations. Matt?
Sure. The Mariner 2 pipeline transports propane and butane, and then the 2X pipeline Mariner 1 will transport ethane. And like I discussed earlier, it's a multifaceted approach to leak detection, verifying there's no leaks. Their computerized leak detection system with the meters are constantly checking product going in, product going out. It's doing a very complex calculation on fractions of a second. It's actually doing a mass balance equation. It's checking mass in versus mass out across all the ins and outs throughout the pipeline. And it's also looking at scientific deviations for elevation head and pressure changes and frictional losses throughout the pipe. So it's pretty complicated. But beyond that, it's also monitoring pressure and doing what's called a pressure point analysis at all points in the pipeline. And if it would see pressure go to a certain low point, it would also shut the pipeline down and trigger an investigation. Likewise, I talked about the planes that are flying. They're looking for damage prevention, preventing people out there from actually hitting the pipeline. That's the biggest risk to these new pipelines is third-party damage. But they're also, in the event there would be a leak, they would be looking for dead vegetation or bubbling or clouds. Likewise, our pipeliners on the ground are looking for the same type of an indication. Is there anything that would look like a fog over the line, or dead vegetation in a certain area, or an odor? An odor can sometimes be an indication as well. And we put markers along the pipeline. You've probably seen them as you're driving around, yellow markers. They have the name of our company. They have the emergency number that can be contacted if you see something along the line. And then for folks that live within a certain distance of the pipelines, we send out mailings to those folks that also have similar information, what to look for if you see a leak, the number, the emergency number you can call, so that we can interact immediately. My team actually conducts regular drills on how to respond to an emergency. We use the National Incident Management Protocols for Incident Command System. So we drill both as a company, and we also drill for the event that we might need a unified command. In a unified command, we're interfacing with the government agencies, both local and federal and state, that may become involved depending on a spill or the size of a spill. And we've actually met with Chester County officials, shared a lot of very sensitive information about the pipeline and the locations it runs, the products it carries, and spill scenarios. And then we meet with them and we've drilled with them side by side so we can put faces to names, understand roles and responsibilities, and establish a rapport so that should something happen, that we're all ready to respond and protect the public first and foremost.
Great. Thanks so much for that. We're going to take as many more questions as we can. We are starting to run short on time. So if we don't get to your question, please know that you can visit marinerpipelinefacts.com/marshcreek, and you can always call our hotline at 855-430-4491. That's toll-free, and it's staff 24/7. We're going to go to our next question. We've got Everett from East Ocean, and his question is specifically, when are drill 521 and drill 500 going to be complete?
Okay, I can tell Everett's from East Goshen because that's a very specific question. For background for others on the call, they're both in the area of Chester Road, 352, between, near Westchester Pike, Boot Road. So the first one that you referenced, 500, Everett, I think it was. So that one is wrapping up. They're completing kind of the ream there and should be pulling back the pipe, in the coming weeks here. If not, August is coming quickly to a close. If not, by the end of August, very shortly after. And what I mean by that, just to take a quick step back without talking too much in jargon, on these HDDs, as we described, we have a drill rig at each end. They drill a pilot hole, which is a smaller size, until they intersect. Basically, they connect the hole at each side, and then they go through reaming to make the hole bigger. And then finally, once that reaming is done, people that have seen our pipeline spread out in different areas, it comes in sections, it's welded together, and then they take the pipe and what we call a pullback. They literally pull the pipe back through the hole, and then they connect it, which we call a tie-in, at either end. So that's just a little bit of background and what I was saying to answer that question. And in terms of the other drill, Everett 521 you referenced, that one's going to be done this winter. So that'll be a little while longer, but that is, closely, nearing completion.
Great. Thanks so much for that answer. Next question we've got, and we've got time for one and maybe two more questions, but the next one is Andrea from Lionville. How many of these workers actually live in our community? And does someone here from Oklahoma or Texas really care about Chester County?
So that's a question we get at times, and it's it can be frustrating on our standpoint. As Matt and Nick and I all introduced ourselves, we're obviously, employees of Energy Transfer, but we all live in Pennsylvania, and raise our families here. In terms of the construction workers, so Energy Transfer doesn't build the pipeline, but we work with outside contractors that are experts in building the pipeline, and they build it. So they hire their contractors. And one thing folks that are on the call and listening have probably heard from time to time is the amount of significant support we get from the building trades and folks that are electricians and welders, steam fitters, teamsters, laborers, equipment operators. The reason for all of that and for these local unions to care is that these are jobs, these are their jobs. They move and they might be working for us, and then they might shift over and work for, if they're a welder, for PICO, or they might do a job for Aqua. This is what they do, and they move from job to job. Operating engineers, laborers, same thing. They might, shift when this project's done, and if there's a PennDOT road project, that's what they might be doing next. So it's all union labor, and there's something that's a national pipeline agreement that essentially requires and specifies what type of labor we need to use. That's a giant misnomer, in particular for the amount of jobs that this project has created across Pennsylvania, not to mention the permanent jobs nearby in Delaware County at our Marcus Hook facility that have been created and continue to be created, based on this project.
Great. Thanks so much for that answer. And it looks like we've got time for one more question. This last question is from Julia, who is with State Representative Caroline Comita. And the question is, she's heard about some complaints about noise from Murphy's Mill, which is a retirement community, and she wants to know what is that noise and can it be muffled?
Sure. So thanks, Julia, for the question. And so, at time to time with construction, frankly, that's the biggest question that we do and we have to deal with, nuisance issues that result from construction. And there's a lot that we do to minimize those. Whether you live near the project or you drive by, what you see at our sites, often are different barriers. And the reason that they're there, they're not just any kind of barrier. We have third-party acoustical engineers and sound experts actually go out there and study the acoustics of an area. So everyone is designed specifically for that site to essentially reduce or diminish, minimize noise. Our folks also will put dampening equipment, over sites as well, just given some general background. In addition, we've used mufflers as well to minimize noise as well as any odors that would come from kind of the equipment that operates, that's running on fuel. So they're, just for background for folks that are on, they're just some of the steps we take to minimize that, as well as, you know, running street sweepers and things like that to keep down dust, to keep the streets clean. And again, you know, just a reminder for folks, if they do have questions or concerns, you know, our hotline number is there, 855-430-4491. If there's an issue, call us. We'll address it. And in terms of, I think Julia said Murphy's Mill retirement community, we'll certainly look at that and talk with our, you know, field team that's at that site and get out there and figure out, you know, what other ways we can do to minimize that noise.
Great. Thank you so much. And we're coming down to the end of our time together and want to really thank everyone who's been on the line with us. We've had a great conversation, a lot of good questions, clearing up information, making sure that folks have the information they need. So we appreciate everyone being on the line. And, of course, we appreciate Joe and Nick and Matt from Energy Transfer being here to answer those questions. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Joe McGinn to give us some more information and close out tonight's program.
Thanks, Nicole. You're talking, I think Julia was mentioning Hershey's Mill as opposed to Murphy's Mill. So again, thanks everybody for joining tonight. We're really encouraged that, you know, there was this great turnout and appreciate the great questions. You know, hopefully we clarified and really addressed some misinformation was out there, as well as I really hope you learn more about the project and Energy Transfer. You know, in particular, you know, one of the giant misnomers that this isn't benefiting local workers. You know, these folks working here, they're Pennsylvanians. They come from PA Union Halls, and not just PA Union Halls, but Union Halls in Chester, Delaware County, and nearby. So I know we probably couldn't answer every question. We just don't have enough time. But we did try to answer as many as we can. And as a reminder, if you've got any concerns about the project in the future, call our 24/7 hotline. Again, it's 855-430-4491. And lastly, we will be posting the recording from tonight's meeting on our website at marinerpipelinefacts.com/Marsh Creek. We encourage you to share this information with your neighbors who are unable to listen in. And for any questions we didn't address, we have FAQs and we'll work to update them and try to work those into the FAQs as well. Again, Nick, Matt, Nicole, and everybody that asked questions and is listening, thanks for participating and have a great evening.